Hi.
This is Take Charge Your Health with Corrine Fornari, clinical nutritionist, clinician assistant, and Carol Peterson, pharmacist.
Listen, learn, and I hope you enjoy the show. Bye.
Welcome back. This is Take Charge of Your Health, and I'm here with my favorite co-host,
Carol Peterson.
And we're continuing our series on Back to Basics, essential nutrients, understanding them. Do you know, Carol, that by the time we're through with this series, our listeners will have more nutritional education than doctors are given in medical school? How do you like that?
I know that's a fact. Actually, one of my professors in pharmacy school did a little presentation. So in nutrition, I got maybe 1 hour lecture, and he based it all on Captain Crunch cereal.
Oh, no. Oh, please help. Go on.
How useful that was. Talk about basics.
Well, this is back to another level of basics. I know in my school, USC, which is now one of the leaders in nutritional education, but at the time we had the head of the education department and said, what is the difference between a beer and pretzels and spinach and something else? He said, it doesn't really matter. They both have the same calories. So, so it doesn't really matter. At that point, I walked out. I don't think he gave many more lectures, but he was the head of the department talking with us and preparing us on nutrition. So what we're doing today is a continuation. Up to now, first we began with vitamin C because it's essential that we understand how vitamin C works in supporting our immune system, supporting our heart, supporting our health, supporting our tissue, the whole gamut. But then we went to vitamin A, and I thought, oh, Carol, let's do A and E because we just don't have enough to talk about on A. Boy, was Carol said, no, we're doing A. Boy, was I wrong. The thing is that's happening right now is the understanding of nutrition is growing exponentially. And it's being looked at from left and right and up and down and all around. And what's happening is the conclusions that they're coming to, looking at the same information, is so much broader than ever before. And their understandings are deeper. So in preparing for vitamin A, I learned so much. I couldn't really believe that here I thought I knew a good portion of it, and boy, was I wrong. We spent the whole hour plus talking about vitamin A, and today we're talking about vitamin E. Now, I've known vitamin E since the 60s. Whoa, am I aging myself?
Uh-huh.
And when I started reading Adele Davis books, Adele Davis was one of the first kind of celebrity nutritionists. She'd sit around talking about nutrition while she was smoking.
Is that a fact?
Yes, that's a fact. She died.
I remember that as my vitamin C production. You need 500 milligrams of vitamin C to replace one cigarette. I hope she was getting it.
Obviously not, and not enough. But what she did was she talked about vitamin E. And at that time, we really didn't understand the different particles or sections or subfactors in vitamin E that we understand now. But she had a good enough understanding. She told us to take wheat germ oil. and how essential wheat germ oil was for maintaining our vitamin E status. And come to find out, guess what? Vitamin E was discovered before they named it when they realized that their cattle or herds were becoming sterile, and those that would conceive would have stillbirths. And was this in the 20s, Carol? You're better on numbers than I am.
Yeah, it's more in the 30s.
In the 30s?
In the 30s.
Okay.
Yeah.
And then
wheat germ oil.
Yeah, exactly.
And vitamin E is interesting. When they first finally realized that this special molecule, and it was alpha tocopherol, really just the one thing, had this effect on carrying a fetus the full pregnancy. They named it after that ability, tocopherol, which is vitamin E, or vitamin E components, there are more than one, comes from carrying a child, the Greek words for carrying a child. So that's the background on why it was named tocopherol, why we even have that word in our lexicon as this vitamin. So wheat germ oil is really quite a nice source. Then by the 1940s, now they're talking about how important vitamin E was with fibroids and endometriosis and atherosclerosis, the thickening of the arteries. And I was quite astonished by that because I've looked into fibroids and endometriosis, even written about them. And vitamin E does not come in to that lexicon of information that you're looking for. Fibroids, I always believed, was very estrogenic driven, and iodine was a big player. Anytime you have lumps and cysts and fibroids and stuff, there's a deficiency of iodine going on, but rarely, or maybe never, would I have thought of vitamin E. And then endometriosis is incredible. Endometriosis is an overgrowth of endometrial tissue that's occurring outside of your body, but it's very much stimulated by estrogen. So pain goes according to your cycle and your production of estrogen. And I believe that there's a big candida component of that. But here again, vitamin E didn't come into the picture in most of the literature I saw about that.
Until recently. Well, actually, until it was early on and then literally forgotten. And now recently we're becoming aware of it again. It's coming to the forefront on how important it is. We're seeing more and more couples that are sterile. The woman's sterile due to endometriosis, due to fibroids, due to menstrual irregularities, or the male that is sterile due to low sperm. We know the importance of vitamin E for male sterility, and you put selenium with that, and it makes the sperm more active, more abundant, and can, in cases, I don't know the percent, but can bring back the ability to conceive. But it's very beneficial for women also. It's very supportive of all our hormones. Do you know where the body stores some of the most vitamin E? It's in the pituitary and the hypothalamus. And both of those glands control our sex hormones.
That's really astonishing. And then there's the feature of vitamin E. It has been interesting interaction with estrogen.
Exactly.
Vitamin E is one of the hallmarks is its powerful, powerful antioxidant effect. And I remember reading years ago that you needed vitamin C for as a water-soluble vitamin to address the water the watery parts of your body, but you needed vitamin E was essential antioxidant for the fat portion, fat-soluble parts of your body, that those two worked hand-in-hand to be an antioxidant, and I believe vitamin E was also featured as something that can be an antioxidant for glutathione and bring it back to its reduced state, which is its most active state. And glutathione, as we talked many times on the show, is your liver's most powerful detoxification molecule that it makes. So it's here we go, circles and circles and circles. This vitamin E is everywhere. Now, we were talking about this, and you brought up how it affects the membranes of each cell.
Exactly.
You want to go into that?
I would love to. Yeah. In that, vitamin E is an antioxidant, and we all know what oxidation is. We see a little piece of metal out in the rain rusting and getting worse year after year. Well, that's called oxidation. And now we also know we can protect that. Well, with different oils and different properties, we can cover it, we can protect it. Well, vitamin E is an antioxidant, a very powerful antioxidant. It's fat soluble, and what in our body has a very large, about 60% fat. What were we looking at? We're looking at the brain. But vitamin E has a very broad spectrum of effects, positive effects. Why? Because it's the number one protector of all our trillions of cells in our body. How does it do that? It does that by protecting the cell membrane. The cell membrane is made of saturated fats, surprise, surprise, and cholesterol. And vitamin E goes into those areas and maintains them in an antioxidant state. So literally every function in the body, because we're dealing with all the cells, is affected by the lack or the appropriate amount or the excess of vitamin E, because vitamin E is protecting every cell and allowing it to maintain its functions. One thing about vitamin E, and I'm going to, when it first came about, we realized that vitamin E stopped angina. The appropriate amount stopped angina. And here we are suffering with angina, but we've got better and better drugs. But they found in the 60s that vitamin E would stop angina. And how would it do that? It does that by allowing all the cells in the body to hold and maintain more oxygen. So they begin to function more efficiently. And in doing that, in bringing more oxygen to the heart, in bringing more oxygen to the cells, you are literally able to block and stop angina. And that was well documented. And that was in the 60s when we first began to really focus on heart disease. Carol?
Not that long ago, we had a program and we discussed the dangers of PUFAs, polyunsaturated fatty acids, the cotton seeds oil, the canola oil, the safflower oil, which when you start looking at labels, these things are everywhere. And one of the things they do, just like saturated fats, they become incorporated into the cell membrane, and they actually create dysfunctional membranes. And people are beginning to realize more and more that these PUFAs are a big problem. Vitamin E, as you're talking about the importance of it interacting with the membrane, I just saw this the other day, that vitamin E is your protectant against the PUFAs. You can go to your store and you can make sure you have fresh fruits, vegetables, et cetera, and you don't have the PUFAs in your product. But as soon as you want to buy a bag of potato chips, you'll find that.
You're in trouble.
There's no getting away from these PUFAs. And then when you go out to dinner and you don't know if that wonderful dish has been cooked in one of these polyunsaturated seed oils. You just have no idea. So vitamin E, making sure that we have adequate vitamin E is a way to protect ourselves from these PUFAs, which are everywhere, and we don't always have the luxury of a label.
It's interesting when we're going back, we're bouncing from symptom to symptom and pathology to pathology, and then we'll move on. But what we're very well aware of is the fact that vitamin E has a tendency, and it has the capability of dissolving clots, blood clots, in the veins and artery, in that it's a powerful antioxidant as well as it works as an anticoagulation nutrient. So it doesn't allow, it breaks up the stickiness of the cells, while so it helps them separate and stops them from being clotted together, while it's reducing the cell's need for oxygen, while it's increasing the cell's ability to uptake oxygen. Sounds like a pretty good balance, doesn't it, Carol?
Yeah, that we knew that since 1946. So,
I thought I had something new.
And then 1945, vitamin E has been shown to cure hemorrhages in the skin and mucous membranes. And so not only does it have a blood thinning effect, it can do the opposite effect to protect you from overbleeding. And then another thing from 1945, decrease the diabetic's need for insulin. We've had Dr. Ben Bickman, I think I got it right now.
Yes.
He specializes in the study of insulin and insulin resistance. And when you read his book, our inability to use insulin correctly and continuously rising of insulin in our body to try to overcome the blockages is a big health problem and is responsible for so many things. Reading his book, I was just astonished at the many things that you don't associate it with. But we have heart disease, we have high blood pressure, we have gout, we have age-related deafness, all kinds of things coming from our inability to use insulin. So 1945, we recognized that when giving insulin to a diabetic, you could probably use less if you had adequate vitamin E. But this probably applies across the board, even to those that are pre-diabetic, that are starting to get insulin resistance, would probably benefit from vitamin E being adequate for that.
Well, we know that diabetics don't absorb well. They have certain specific deficiencies in their ability to absorb nutrients. And so, therefore, many are very low in vitamin E, and that's been quite well documented. But also the vitamin E can help with peripheral neuropathies. You know, vitamin E is very neuroprotective. That's why the body keeps it in the brain, keeps it in the endocrine organs as in high doses. Because why? It's protecting the nerves. It's protecting the nerve signals. But you know what else it's protecting? It's protecting the protector. It's protecting the myelin sheath along the nerves. So when you look at myelin sheath, what is attached? You know, you could follow this out. This doesn't have a study, but let's follow it out in that here we're protecting the myelin sheath. What gets attacked by the myelin sheath? Where we're looking at MS, that's what it does. It attacks the myelin sheath, leaves the nerves unprotected, and creates a neurologic deficit that people cannot function with. Well, let's look at that a little carefully. Maybe we as practitioners, or maybe you as a patient, should be taking some vitamin C if you have any neurologic problems. I was speaking in my office the other day with a lovely young woman who had COVID about a year ago. And she got over it. She didn't go to the hospital, didn't need to. She got over it. But now she's having what they call COVID brain. She's having brain fog. She's lost her sense of smell and taste, and it hasn't come back in a year. She has neurologic problems and leg cramping. She was a big-time exerciser. Well, let's go through the list of what vitamin E works with. One, it works with the nerves and has been shown to be very good in dealing with brain fog. It also makes our neurons more sensitive. What are we dealing with when we're dealing with loss of taste and loss of smell? Those are the nerves that connect to the tongue and into the nose and the nasal passages. Well, where does the virus come in? It comes in through the nose, the mouth, the nasal passages, and that's where it attacks and stays while it's there. So you get a double hit of this virus on those neural pathways. Well, maybe a little vitamin E might benefit. It also benefits you in terms of your immune system and your ability to resist. It strengthens our cells, our MK cells or our killer cells, and all our white blood cells by maintaining strong cell membranes, which allows them to do the work without being attacked by bacteria, fungus, virus, and what they're. So now they're able to protect us rather than just protecting themselves. Kara?
Well, it was only in the 1970s, a researcher named John Bertoni found a patient that he identified as the first adult case ever published with vitamin D deficiency. And he was able to do laboratory work at a specialty lab to actually measure her vitamin E. And it was actually extremely low or sometimes even undetectable. And she had incredible problems, and a lot of them were called ataxia. This is inability to use your body's function in a normal regulated manner. And also you'd have these involuntary movements all the time. She was also really plagued with an inability to focus with her eyes, and she was plagued with neuropathies in her body. He didn't distinguish that she was actually feeling everything until he was testing her legs and went all the way up to the torso, where she finally had some feeling, and then described it as a kind of buzzy feeling. Again, neurological stuff, just as we were talking about. So, you know, it's not that long ago in human history that we're able to identify that this woman was a case where vitamin E supplementation, even though by the time she was identified, she was already a young adult, it helped her with many, many of her symptoms. She was not entirely restored to perfect functioning, but it went a long way to have her have a more normal life. So that was huge.
Then what happened to the, I'd like to tell the audience what happened to the doctor. He went to give his case history, and he went to give it to a conference, a neurologic conference, and he wasn't allowed on the stage. He went to publish the articles about his observation. Now, this is a patient of one, but it's not a study. It's an observation. And those are very appropriate to publish and share with other practitioners. And he went to publish them, and they were rejected from journal after journal. And as a result, he was never able to get this published for about 15 years. The government blocked the ability to purchase or to send vitamin E through the mails, and they erased information of the studies of vitamin E that they had compiled. Fortunately, there were copies of it, but that they had compiled and blocked all information. And when he said, if you're doing work with vitamin E, be prepared to have all your study funding blocked and being called a quack. Pretty heavy duty what people have to go through when they're dealing with nutrients and showing how beneficial they are.
This is, you're now drifting over to the Shute brothers.
Yes.
Yes, so Wilford and Evan Shute, according to Andrew Saul, cured thousands of vitamin E. And I've been told that the Shute brothers became so famous for their work with vitamin E in cardiovascular disease, people would come from all over the world and they would stand in line waiting to get into the office to talk to either one of the Shute brothers about their cardiac thing. As we already said, it has effects on atherosclerosis. It's got effects on angina. There's some very important cardiovascular implications. But Canada was a hotbed of nutritional research, but the Shute brothers experienced blockages everywhere in getting the word out. They carefully documented everything. They, in the end, wrote some books about vitamin E, the heart and vitamin E. It was published in 1956. Medical textbook was published in 1954, Alpha Tocopherol in cardiovascular disease. So it's possible to go back and see that, but the suppression of that particular vitamin was huge. We're talking about, we're having some of the same problems right now with getting information on nutrition and lifestyle to boost your immune system. We are not getting told what we could do to make ourselves more resilient to infection. In fact, that information is being rapidly eliminated from all sorts of internet resources. I don't know how many practitioners I have seen try to get some messages out and their information gets wiped. So this is not a new phenomenon that we are getting access blocked the information.
Yeah, being it ever so simple, being it ever so cheap, being it ever so non-toxic, it's being forbidden to be released and to be shared with the public, which is exactly what happened in the case of vitamin E. We're speaking about vitamin E in our Back to Basics series, and this is Take Charge of Your Health with Corinne Fornari, clinical nutritionist, physician assistant, and Carol Peterson, pharmacist. And we'll be right back. But there is another study, and vitamin E, where they were showing that vitamin E is essential for preemies, premature babies and newborns. And Carol has a story, really important story. Carol?
Yeah, that was an interesting thing, because as I'm looking at vitamin E, I suddenly remember this. I had to call up my daughter. I said, remember your friend Jordan from grade school? Her father published on vitamin E on preterm babies. And I go, what's their last name? Trying to find this, because I couldn't remember. But the fact that I could pull this out of my memory made me pretty pleased. But it was Dr. Gutcher, G-U-T-C-H-E-R, and you could pull that up easily if you look at that. And what he did was recognizing that there's an issue of carrying a baby full term with low vitamin E. These preterm babies were also known to be low in vitamin E. And so his work with the preterm babies was actually to use vitamin E in IVs, and then those preemies would thrive. So that was pretty exciting at the time. I remember that. I saw him become pretty well known for that particular study and observation. So I wonder if we actually do give preterm babies vitamin E. I don't think you'd have to do IV. It would, being fat soluble, you could probably do it on the skin.
You could just rub it on them and they could absorb it. But there's a couple of things. That comes to the next subject. Well, before we go to skin, which vitamin E is essential for skin health, but before we go there, let's talk about the liver and how important it is for those with fatty liver. Vitamin E helps with the emulsification and as an antioxidant with liver. Now, what is happening due to the ubiquitous high fructose corn syrup in all the foods you buy, even ones you think don't have it, that is completely broken down by the liver. And what is it doing? It's clogging the liver. So what we're seeing is an epidemic of fatty liver. And vitamin E helps that. It helps dissolve the fat deposits and protects the liver while the liver is processing the fat and breaking that down. Now, if you put that together with stop eating the offending substance, you have a really powerful treatment for liver protection. And literally, they've seen the fatty liver being able to be turned around with this very simple but powerful intervention. Now, let's go back to skin. You know, vitamin E is really important for scar tissue. There are many reasons why. One of the reasons is because it increases oxygen into the cells. So where you have stretch marks, where you have a scar, where you have something that is healing, not open, you don't want to put this into an open cut, but closed and still healing, still mending, within 10 days. And even afterwards, you rub vitamin E directly on that area, and that scar has the potential of reducing in size and becoming much lighter and healing stronger. They also talk about vitamin E topically because it protects the skin from UV radiation.
Many years ago, I met a woman who was obviously older. She had graying hair, and her face had not a single wrinkle on it. So I asked her what she did, and she said she broke open a capsule of vitamin E and she applied it to her skin every day, which is what I did that very night. I was so inspired.
Have you kept it up?
No, I have not. I found it too tacky and icky. However, I have seen some recommendations, like you can put the ingredients in that capsule into a cream that you are using and do it that way, and it probably would work just fine. If you go to health food stores or even regular stores, you see so many products, skin products, that have vitamin E in it, and it's to prevent wrinkling, it's to restore the glow in your face. You'll find all sorts of anti-aging products have vitamin E in it. You can find vitamin E in hair shampoos and conditioners to improve the vitality of the skin in your scalp.
The question with those statements is, what type of vitamin E? Because we're going to go next, is because there's different types of vitamin E, and there is a synthetic vitamin E. And that's a really important statement, because the synthetic vitamin E has very high toxicities and does not show the effects that we're talking about. It does not dilate the vein and arteries and increase oxygen to the cells. And it has a low toxicity point. So you take small amounts and you could become in a toxic area. So, Carol, there's two types of vitamin E. There's the tocotrienols and the tocopherols. Up to now, we've focused on the tocopherols because that's what we understood. Tocopherols are very available. They're available in foods. They're available in nuts. They're available in seeds. But you really can't cook them or roast them. If they're raw, they're more available. That's why wheat germ oil is such a good source of vitamin E, whereas wheat is not. Why? We're taking the seed out, and now we just have the wheat that has a toxicity, and it has like a drawing factor, and it pulls vitamin E out of the body by utilizing it in such a high rate. Whereas the seeds is where you're going to find your vitamin E. But maybe you can explain a little more clearly the difference between these two portions of the vitamin E.
Yeah, we actually have 8 forms of vitamin E. The tocopherols, as you just mentioned, and the tocotrienols. And these are in less abundance, but they are probably the more potent. And some of the most interesting work comes from Dr. Barry Tan, who's written about, but he says the real vitamin E. So each of these groups has an alpha, a beta, a gamma, and delta. And he feels that the delta tocotrienol is the most potent of them all. And he's based a lot of research on this. And he, quite by accident, on the trip to some exotic
South American
country, Dr. Tan happened on a plant called annatto. And this is a fruit which has really brightly colored seeds from a plant called annatto. And what happened was he broke open the plant, he broke open the seeds, and he noticed that this wasn't browning like things tend to brown. Fruits and everything will rapidly turn brown when their protective surface is broken. And these were not. They stayed bright colors. And he goes, what in the world can be such a powerful antioxidant that these seeds are not changing color? And what he later found was that the annatto plant seeds were so full of delta tocotrienol. Now, he has continued to research in this area, and he said it has powerful effects with the cardiovascular disease, as we were discussing, and he also feels that its ability to be an adjunct in cancer therapies is huge. And there are ongoing studies, and there are some completed studies where this particular form of vitamin E has been so effective. So Barry Kahn's book is a nice read about this discovery about this particular form of vitamin E being so potent and powerful, and I think very promising research.
He talked about patients with pancreatic cancer that were scheduled for surgery, and they were given the Anatto for a short period of time, just a few weeks, and they went to do the surgery, and the tumors had shrunk. He feels that this is a very, very powerful adjunct to any type of cancer therapies that might be being given, as a matter of fact. And he has made this his life work. But let's get back to this, in that we want natural source vitamin E, and we really do not want the synthetic. And you can see the synthetic on the bottle because it says DL tocopherols, and that is the double form. The DL is a form that's only made by humans. It's not a natural form. DL is not a natural form. Sure. And it's made through processing with oils, which those oils are toxic to us. So literally, we're taking a vitamin E in that is toxic. So how would we find the best form of vitamin E? One is, as we said, Anatto is a very good form, but not a complete form. It's very specific and very high dose. Carol, where else would we go? How would we find it?
Well, vitamin E is very rich in the plant world, in nuts and seeds and green leafy vegetables. In the animal world, we have some of the highest sources are abalone, goose meat, Atlantic salmon, rainbow trout, snails, crayfish, fish roe, octopus. So
not the most common.
Not the most common kind of thing. Probably not in your McDonald's meal. So that's quite interesting. But so fish and all sorts of animals, sunflower seeds, almonds are high. Hazelnut oil is high, almond oil. Pine nuts. Mm-hmm. I just got said it was a keto mix of nuts, and it had a bunch of pine nuts in it. Very nice. So you can find it kind of pervasively. And again, remember green leafy vegetables. It's not particularly in the highest forms like some of the meats or the concentrated nuts and seeds, but it's there too. So definitely having a varied diet with some of these things in their fresh forms and not in old rancid forms are going to be high in vitamin E.
Walnuts have tocotrienols, whereas almonds have more tocopherols. But when you cook them or roast them, what you find is that you have denatured the vitamin E. And so it's important not to have roasted nuts, but to have raw nuts. Another way to get some of the higher level vitamin E is to sprout your nuts. And you can do that. You could do that with almonds very easily. You put them in water overnight and soak them. And then you drain out the water and put them in water again, and they will start to sprout. And then you drain out that water, and then if you want, you could make your own almond milk. You can put some water in a blender and blend them very thoroughly. Now you're getting the sprout and the meat and the nut. Put a little vanilla, a trace of salt, just a pinch, and you could put a little stevia in there, and you have a delicious drink. It's delicious in the summer. It's light. You could put it over ice cubes. You could drink it in the winter. It's just a delicious drink. And what you're getting is loads of vitamin E. You have enhanced the vitamin E by the sprouting. And I wanted to say one other thing. I wanted to come back to tocotrienols and what the activity is. What they find is it's 500 times more effective and stronger and 5,000 times faster than just the regular vitamin E. And so it's really worth it to look into this as a source and see if you can get it and take it as you need it. This is another thing. You don't need large amounts. You can have trace amounts and find that your circulation increases. You can have trace amounts and find that your neuropathy reduces. You don't need large and large amounts of vitamin E. I remember when I was first on this radio program and with Sherry 22 years ago when I was first doing Take Charge of Your Health, and we had Dr. Stephen Sinatra, and he always said 200 milligrams, but he didn't specify. We didn't know how to specify what type of vitamin E. He said 200 international units, actually, of vitamin E in any heart protocol. So we're not talking about thousands of international units. We're talking about 200, which is a relatively small amount of milligrams and micrograms.
So Dr. Sinatra is a well-known cardiologist.
Exactly.
So I'd like to also bring up one other supplement that people may come across, and that's water-soluble vitamin E.
Oh, I'm not aware of it.
Okay, there is such a thing, and they make esters with acetate, succinate, phosphate. I've seen those, and this was actually developed as a way for people who have trouble with fat-soluble vitamins to absorb it. And after you absorb it, you actually will convert, your liver will convert it to the normal fat forms of vitamin E. So that's out there too. I'm not sure what I think about it. I am sure what I think about it. I think we should improve our fat absorption.
And exactly.
That's when we have a trouble. And so our body depends on bile to emulsify fats in our meals. And vitamin E, being fat-soluble, hands down, it's going to be better absorbed when you take it with a meal. And then it's going to be better absorbed if you have enough bile absorb this with. So go ahead, Corinne.
And what happens is many of us, because we're taking all these acid blockers, our ability to thin our bile and utilize our bile is based on correct digestion, and it's based on nutrients. It's based on vitamin E. You got a circle here. The ability to have thin and flowing bile that is released as the food is leaving the stomach, the acidic food is leaving the stomach, is based to a degree on the acidity in the stomach, which we are blocking Millions and millions of us are taking acid blockers. We're taking long-term acid blockers. We're taking short-term acid blockers, which then, as the food is released from the stomach, it's not acidic enough to stimulate the response of the bile to come out and then help with digestion of fats. So the bile gets kind of, you've seen old oil where it gets bumpy and thick.
Fleshy, yep.
And even this is what we call bile stones. And what do we do about that? Well, we remove the gallbladder. What else? But what we really can do, and we can do it before we have the problem, is we could work with our digestion to get healthy bile release so the flow is going through. And it has been said, and I haven't seen it documented, but I've heard it said multiple times, that the problem with vitamin E isn't as much as intake as it is absorption, because we have interfered with our absorption so severely that we have interfered with our ability to absorb our fat-soluble vitamins.
That's right. And some of the things you can do, if you've had your gallbladder removed, what you are now lacking is a little pouch of extra bile to be released right when you need it. And even though your liver is the source of making bile, it's like drip, 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 drip. You no longer have this lovely little sac to give you a boost of bile when you need it on time. So you can take ox bile tablets with your fatty meals. And very few surgeons will let you know that. They just let you go on your own, and you're stuck with having impaired fat absorption. And for people who still have their gallbladder, to stimulate bile, many cultures have products that are bitter in nature.
We did
a whole program on bitters with Dr. Chris Shade, and using bitters with your meal will stimulate even more the release of bile and help you absorb your fats.
Well, what it's interesting. Let's go quick full circle because we're coming to the end of the hour. What do the Chinese recommend coming out of winter? Bitters, bitter vegetables, dandelions, arugula, high vitamin C fruits, which if you take too many plums, you're going to get diarrhea. What are we doing? What is happening there? You're thinning the bile. You're trying to release from the winter when you were eating very heavy foods. And so what you're trying to do is support the seasonal eating that's switching each season. And this is done and supported through bitters, through foods, through our actual physical desire to eat foods. I mean, how many people on a 98 degree day just crave beef stroganoff? Could you imagine eating beef stroganoff on the beach? No, you want salads. You want things that are light, that move food through you easily. You want things that are watery and fluidy. But also, at the same time, you want to support your digestion. So make sure, look into vitamin E. Make sure if you're planning to take it, that you take the natural source. Try to incorporate it into the foods you eat and enjoy your meals. That's what it's all about. Nature really supported us in focusing us to the foods that are right for us, season by season, area by area. And it's amazing when we just look to nature what we find out. So Carol, being with you is always a pleasure. I always learn.
And so do I. Boy, there's so much to learn. And there's so much to share. And it's thank you to our audience for being with us and learning along with us.
And take this information. Don't just listen. Take it. Make it yours. And how do you make it yours? By one, reviewing this talk, and two, utilizing the information that we share with you so you can get healthier. So I want to thank you so much, and we will continue our series next week. It's going to be a fun one, very interesting, on vitamin K and what we're seeing with health, with a broader understanding of vitamin K. So we'll be back next week. Thank you again for sharing this time with us.
Thank you so much, and we'll be back next week.
And I just want to remind you, at the end of this series, there will be a quiz. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
So we'll be back next week. Thank you again. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Remember, this information is not an attempt to diagnose or a substitute for treatment. As always, we urge you to take this and all other information we share with you up with your healthcare practitioner. Clearly, this comes under the category of taking charge of your health. You can hear this program in its entirety on my Facebook, Corinne Fornari, RPA CCN, or on Take Charge of Your Health Facebook page, Take Charge of Your Health. My website is fornarihealth.com, and my office number is 212-219-0700. That's 212-219-0700. And I know many of you noticed that beautiful music, a big change. My brother's group wrote it for me. Left Hook from Redding, California. Really special. Thank you so much for spending this time with us, and we'll be back next week. Bye-bye.